Well, good morning, church. Psalm 23 is where we will be this morning, a very familiar psalm, but I hope for us, my prayer for us is that we will see just the depths and the beauty of this chapter in new and refreshing ways. We've been going through the book of Psalms. This is now our third week. And our hope is that we would take these psalms. The first week we were in Psalm chapter 1, and then we went in Psalm 13, and now we're in Psalm 23. Our goal is that these psalms would be in your back pocket, per se. That these would be sayings that not just in our pocket, but in our heart. And Psalm 23 may be one of those psalms. It definitely is for me. There's something about the psalms that provides language for the soul. We normally don't talk about or talk to our soul, but David has, he doesn't hold back. He knows that we both are material and immaterial, and so he'll preach at his soul, as we have seen, to reveal what is there. As I was thinking about this chapter, as I've been thinking about the book of Psalms, I've been thinking about the first time I went and saw a 3D movie. Now, I know 3D movies are popular now, and like there's not that big of a deal, but there was a time when you remember the 3D glasses that had two different colors on them, and then there was a time when I was I got a bit older where the Natural Museum of Science, I believe, in Houston had like an IMAX where you actually put on like full-on blown out like goggles, all right, for this 3D movie. And I remember, I still remember this to this day, I'm still dealing with some PTSD from it, okay, as I'm watching this movie, because I'd never seen a 3D movie before, and I remember watching this movie, and it was on, I remember it was about dinosaurs, and I remember not only were we watching on the screen, but the dinosaurs literally, they came to life, and they were jumping out off the screen like Jurassic Park, but real life, okay? And I was like a teenager, and I was so like blown away by the 3D thing. Like I really thought a dinosaur was going to bite my face off that I punched myself in my face, because I thought I was for sure it was going to be right there. There's something, church, when we open up the book of Psalms, is that we're putting on our 3D glasses to see that the Lord provides for us different terrain and different depth than just our present circumstance. And so we see in the midst of our circumstances, we see a shepherd. See, Psalm 23 does something here similar, just like in our 3D movie. It doesn't remove the hard things from the picture. There are still valleys. There are still enemies. There is still exhaustion. There's still wandering. There's still uncertainty. And there's even death that we may be experiencing, have encountered this past week. But see, Psalm 23 helps us see another reality in the middle of it. The valley is real, but we'll see that the shepherd's presence is available. The enemies are real, but so is his table. The exhaustion is real, but so are the green pastures and still waters. The uncertainty is real, but so is the shepherd who knows the way. See, David, as he's writing this psalm, he knew sheep. He was a shepherd, which, by the way, anytime that you see sheep show up in the Bible, our ears and eyes ought to perk up a bit, because that means God's about to do something. Moses, tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, Exodus chapter 3, he's tending sheep. And then Exodus 3, the burning bush is around the corner. David, a shepherd. In Luke 2, there were shepherds, and they get VIP access to when Jesus showed up, when God put on flesh. It was through shepherds. See, David had to be tending after sheep in order for God to tend after his heart. So before he would lead a nation, God said, no, I'm going to put you around some sheep so that I can do my work in you. I can prepare you for what I have for you, the divine assignment that I have for you. See, David, before you are ever first a shepherd, no, you're first a sheep before you are a shepherd. See, this is why David writes, the Lord is my shepherd. Hear that word, my. He's not some distant shepherd. No, the Lord is our shepherd, my shepherd. This is personal for David. It's personal for us. See, we wear ourselves out trying to hold everything together. We try to secure our children. We try to manage everyone's future. We try to keep everyone happy. We keep working. We keep achieving. And we can find exhaustion in that. And maybe the question underneath Psalm 23 this morning is, where are you going to soothe the ache in your soul, church? Because if it isn't Jesus, something else will take his place. We will attempt to look to money, we'll look to approval, we'll look to our children, we'll look to fear or control, we may look to our phone. And those shepherds always ask for more and yet are unable to deliver. See, Jesus, our good shepherd, he is different. See, our first thought this morning is, let the shepherd care for you. Let the shepherd care for you. Psalm 23, verse 1 says, the Lord, he is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul, and he leads me in the paths of righteousness for the sake of his name. See, notice who's doing almost everything. We see the shepherd, he makes, he leads, he restores. See, Psalm 23 doesn't begin with the sheep accomplishing some things, but with what the shepherd provides. And because of what the shepherd provides, David concludes, I shall not want. This does not mean that we'll get everything that we want. It means because he is our shepherd, we can trust him with what we truly, truly need. See, when we shift our gaze away from our good shepherd and forget that we are his sheep of his pasture, fear can creep in and we can get the case of the what ifs. Y'all know about the what ifs. When anxiety creeps into your heart, we start asking about all these different types of scenarios. What if we don't have enough money? What if my child makes the wrong decision? What if this pain that I'm mysteriously experiencing now in my left rib is serious? Like, we start having this, all this, like, what if this? What if that? What if I don't get everything done? What if I can't fix this? Even YouTube Academy ain't helping me out. What if? See, in my house, we call this, like, when we start entertaining the what ifs, we're entering into crazy land, is what we say. And both my spouse and I hope to keep her accountable as well. As soon as these thoughts start happening, see, before long, we're not dealing with what actually is reality. We're trying to live in 10 different futures that haven't even happened yet. And it's like, no, the good shepherd, if that's you this morning, if we have a case of the what ifs, of a lot of different scenarios that aren't reality, the shepherd invites us to slow down. Hey, rewind, recenter, and reorient your soul with me. See, we need a good shepherd to meet us in the crazy, because all of us have some crazy. So, like, we don't need to be like, oh man, there's some crazy thoughts happening. Yeah, because we're born in sin. We fight against sin by the spirit that dwells in us, but the flesh creeps in and craziness happens. What ifs happen? But a good shepherd has been provided for us. See, we don't have to worry about every what if. We need to know who is with us. Before David looks at what he lacks, he looks at who his shepherd is. That's what anxiety does. It looks at what we don't have. He gets caught up in all the different types of scenarios, and Psalm 23 centers us and says, no, this is what has been provided. This is what you do have. The good shepherd himself. See, what are we carrying? What are you carrying? Because somewhere inside you, you believe everything depends upon you. And if that is us this morning, hear this phrase here from Psalm 23. In the midst of all these uncertainties in our lives, sometimes we need to lay down. And when we don't want to, the good shepherd says, he makes us lie down in green pastures. See, this is a word that some of us desperately need. But if we were honest, some of us don't know how. We feel guilty when we're not productive. We feel behind when we stop. There's another email. There's another text. There's another meal to prepare. There's another practice, another project, another assignment, another hard conversation, another person who needs something, so we keep moving. But the shepherd knows something the sheep sometimes refuse to acknowledge. And we acknowledge this morning that we are finite. We are not the creator. We are the creation. He is the infinite one. We need sleep. We need quiet. We need food. We need people. We need boundaries. And we also need to receive. See, the shepherd's refreshment, notice, prepares the sheep for the path ahead. Notice the progression of this psalm. He talks about us being restored by still waters. Biblical rest is not escape from faithfulness, but preparation for it. I'm going to say that again. Biblical rest is not escape from faithfulness, but preparation for the faithful journey. See, escape is not the same thing as restoration. When we're exhausted, we often turn towards scrolling or binging or drinking or buying or checking out or entertainment. We attempt to numb ourselves, but Jesus doesn't merely want to numb your tired soul. He wants to lead us beside still waters. And it's in the still waters our soul is restored. He brings us back to life. I don't know where your thermostat has been the past couple days, but when I looked at my thermostat yesterday, it was in the triple digits. And once I get to the triple digits, I just lose sight. I just stop counting. I was like, it's just hot here in Texas. It's August. It's just hot. We're talking about earlier, just about like, thankfully my grass isn't growing as much where it doesn't need to be mowed. But every now and then you got to get out there and trim. It's like a dust bowl. I was reminded as I was thinking about just how hot it is that I used to wear football pads in this kind of weather, where I would have my helmet on and I would just be dripping. It would just go straight into my eyeballs, straight to the eyeballs. I don't know how I did it. I see the stadium over here. I see it lit up in the morning. I'm like, I wish I had that option to practice in the morning. I know it's earlier, but it's cooler. My junior high football field was known as the Dust Bowl because you could never get the dirt out of your eyes all season long. And I don't know about the experience y'all had, but my experience is that our water break was a privilege. Like, it wasn't a right. Coach decided when water break was happening. You could be seeing double or triple, and coach would be like, it's not water break. Get out there and play the game. And y'all, when we had our water break, which, by the way, our water cow is what we called it. It was a PVC pipe hooked up to a garden hose with, like, needle drill holes in it. It barely came out. It's like, can we open up these holes a little bit more, break the pipe, and get some water? Because I am dehydrated. I'm starting to see things. It was like the fountain of life when I came to that PVC pipe. It was the best thing ever. And no one cared. They put their mouth all over that. We were thirsty, dehydrated, about to pass out, and some even did. See here in the text how our good shepherd, he invites us, for those that are fatigued this morning, for those that are exhausted this morning, for those that maybe not physically about to pass out, but spiritually you feel like you're about to pass out and tap out, now the good shepherd's able to do his work. And he provides not just water, but still water for the soul. He restores our soul. See, Jesus says, in the midst of us being exhausted, he says, come to me. He restores our soul. This carries two ideas. He revives the exhausted sheep, and at the same time, he brings the wandering sheep home. See, some of us need restoration because we're exhausted. Others need restoration because we've wandered. And most of us know something about both of those things. See, the shepherd knows what to do with tired sheep, and the shepherd knows what to do with wandering sheep. What does he do? What's a good shepherd do? Is he directs us. He leads us, the text says. The text says, he leads me in paths of righteousness. See, rest isn't the end. Restoration prepares us to follow. Jesus doesn't want to restore us merely so that we feel better. He restores us so that we can walk with him again. Amen. To follow him. Sheep wander, so do we. And sometimes what we need is to look to our good shepherd. We don't need another 5-year plan. We need to stay close enough to the shepherd to hear this way. And if we're honest, some of us think, man, I wish I just had the whole map. I wish I had every detail of my life figured out. I wish I knew the next thing. I wish I knew what college I was going to. I wish I knew what was next. I wish what job I should be pursuing. And now I'm in this job. Maybe I shouldn't be part of this job. See, we wish we had all of the details. In church, if you were given every single detail of your life, where would faith belong? See, Jesus intentionally, the good shepherd intentionally makes us lie down. He restores our soul, and he intentionally withholds so we can take hold of him. To cling to our good shepherd in faith. knowing that he does have a plan. And we're called to make the step with wisdom as we look to the Psalms and looked for grace and wisdom and discipline. So you don't have to understand everything about the road when you know the one who is leading you. Because it truly is about the name and fame of Jesus. That's why Psalm 23 says it's for the sake of his name. It's for his glory. See, God has attached his own character to his shepherding of his people. His faithfulness rests on who he is, not how impressive the sheep are. See, our confidence is not that we are really good at following the shepherd. No, the mark of a Christian is actually acknowledging that we're not good at following the shepherd. We need him. Prone to wander. So our confidence is in the shepherd who keeps his sheep. See, Jesus looks glorious when we trust him enough to follow wherever he leads in this path of righteousness, not when we try to establish a righteousness of our own. And when this happens, when we wander, see, sometimes wandering doesn't look like open rebellion. Sometimes it looks like taking matters into our own hands or control. We overwork, we isolate on this other path rather than the path of our good shepherd. We avoid, we force things. We try to manage outcomes that belong to God. And underneath is the quiet assumption, I know better than the shepherd. But the path of righteousness is the path of trusting him enough to follow, again, wherever he leads. Trust the shepherd, church. Trust the shepherd, not just on the mountaintop, but in the valley. Look with me in the word in Psalm 23, verse 4. It says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? How do we not fear evil in the midst of the valley? For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, what do? They comfort me. The psalm doesn't say, if the Lord is your shepherd, you won't have valleys. It says, even though. There's assumed language there that you will encounter the valley. The phrase for valley here is a deep darkness. It doesn't just mean physical death. There are many different valleys that we go through. Many different valleys that you may have been experiencing this past week or past season or in this season. Whether it be the death of someone that you love, a diagnosis, a child who is struggling, marriage pain, loneliness, burnout, disappointment with the church, or maybe a season where God feels distant. You may have walked in today with a valley nobody else knows about. See, the right path of verse 3 can still go through the dark valley of verse 4. He leads us besides that. He restores our soul. Doesn't mean that we skip out on verse 4. No, it's we go through the valley, but we don't go through the valley alone. For our good shepherd, he is with us. So we don't assume that hard things or hard seasons are wrong. No, Jesus himself walked the faithful path through Gethsemane, through Calvary, so that we can say with David, you are with me. This is the center of the psalm. If you see in verses 1 through 3, David says, he leads me, he restores me, he makes me lie down in green pasture. But as soon as we get to verse 4, the word he changed to you. You are with me. Do you see it in the text? See, David stops talking about God, and he starts talking to God. Are you all with me? See, his theology now is impacting the valley. His theology, what he knows, now he is in a moment where he is seeking the good shepherd, not just talking about him, but talking to him. See, suffering turns theology into prayer. Notice what David does not say. He doesn't say, I know why this is happening. He does not say, I know when this will end. He does not say, everything has been fixed. No, he says, you are with me. See, our hope in darkness is God's presence, not merely the resolution of circumstances. See, for those with grieving and heavy hearts this morning, some valleys cannot be fixed. There are empty chairs in your home that once weren't there. Relationships have changed. There may be people we deeply miss. See, Psalm 23 doesn't ask you to pretend the valley isn't dark. You don't walk through it alone. We trust the shepherd, sees the terrain we cannot see. You may not see the way through, but the shepherd does. And what comforts David is the good shepherd has a rod and he has a staff. A rod protects. A staff guides. The shepherd loves you enough to defend you, and he loves you enough to redirect you. If we're honest, sometimes we just want his rod of protection and get offended when he uses the staff to correct us. But our good shepherd, both protection and the correction are care. At times, Jesus restores us by comforting us. Other times, he restores us by correcting us, and both are love. And I was thinking about this, the rod and the staff. I remembered, for whatever reason, the image of my dad's hands came to mind. My dad his specialty, he would break horses. And so he was trained in dealing with horses. There would be people that would bring their horses to him because it's a thing just to get a horse loaded up on a trailer. But my dad had such a knack for it. He was like a horse whisperer. And I remember his hands being so, like, especially during the cold, they would be so, like, cracked and calloused. But he had some thick hands as well. And I there was one time a horse reared up on him, and it caught his finger where he couldn't bend it. And so all of my life, my dad's finger was straight like this. So you never knew, is dad mad at me? Or is he just trying to, like, get my attention? But as soon as you saw this happen right here, it's like, yes, sir, yes. Oh, he's just saying, okay, we're good. We don't know. Like, we're not doing anything wrong here. But I remember it was kind of like, and there was this one moment when I was younger, we had this horse, and it reared up on me really bad. And I was trying with all of my might, and we're talking about a horse, and little me, that's maybe a teenager at this point, is trying to hold that horse down. It's like, oh, horse, you want a challenge accepted. I could have died, right? So I'm trying to hold this horse, and my dad is, thankfully, all I hear is his voice. And the voice got closer. When I found myself in a situation where I could not get out on my own, I needed somebody to step in, and the voice wasn't sufficient enough, so he provided his presence. Are y'all with me? And as in the midst I'm trying to fight this thing, holding as I can, my dad took the reins and literally made that horse sit down like a dog. And he lunged and said, this is what you got to do. In that moment, I thought, I'm never going to mess with my father. His hands could correct. They could make a horse submit. But his hands were also tender. See, he knew when to activate correction, authority, protection, but also comfort. Correct and comfort at the same time. This is what we see with the rod and the staff of our good shepherd that protects, guides. See, the shepherd is strong enough to protect you, and he's gentle enough to lead you. And because of this reality, David concludes, I'm comforted by this. Comfort is made available in our good shepherd. The same Jesus who touches lepers, welcomes children, and restores wandering Peter is also the king who conquers sin and death. He is the slaughtered lamb, and he's the Lion of Judah. He is our shepherd. He is our king who provides a table for us to commune with him. And he invites you, church, to sit at the shepherd, at his table. To sit at his table. See in verse 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Don't miss that phrase. The shepherd provides a table in, not in the absence, but in the presence of our enemies. And the shepherd anoints our head with oil. And David says, my cup overflows. See, the picture changes from now a shepherd becomes the host. And notice the enemies, they're still there. God doesn't say once everything settles down, then we'll have dinner. Once work slows down, once the grief is gone, once the conflict gets resolved, once your schedule clears, once everybody likes you. No. He prepares a table in the presence of the enemies. Think with me, church. Think about this moment. Imagine you're having family dinner. You've cooked the meal. Actually, you know what? You didn't even cook. It was already prepared for you, okay? How amazing is that? The meal is prepared. You're sitting down at the table. And outside your windows are your enemies who are looking in the window knowing that they don't like you. They got something against you. They've posted about you. And they're watching you. That's uncomfortable. That would be extremely awkward. The fact that you're on my property looking through my window is bad enough. See, most of us would spend that entire dinner looking out the window, wondering what they think and what they're saying. But David is surrounded by his enemies, and yet he is more captivated by the goodness of his host. See, when a meal is put before us, especially a good one, we like to take pictures of it, post it on Instagram, post it on Facebook. Look what I'm eating. Look at this. Mm-mm. Now, our good shepherd, he provides a meal for us to feast and to enjoy him. The enemies are still there. Listen, but they no longer control the room. Their words still may hurt. Their rejection still may sting. But listen, they don't get to define you. The generosity of the host is greater than the threats of the enemy. And when you know you have a seat at his table, you're more free from needing a seat at everyone else's. So you don't have to be included everywhere. You don't have to be liked by everyone. You don't have to win every person over. You already know where you belong. You already know you are welcomed, loved, and cared for by the Shepherd King. Oh, this doesn't make us indifferent to people. No, it actually frees us up to love people without needing something from them in return. Did y'all hear that? See, when we feast at the table of our good shepherd that provides and is now the host, I no longer look to you that which only Jesus can give. Therefore, I'm free to rest in the approval of the King because of what Jesus has done for us. See, the table here is key. And see, in David's world, the table of oil and overflowing cup, it communicates generous hospitality and honor and welcome. See, God isn't just nuking up the leftovers and throwing it on the table from a few days ago with a bag of chips, a Lay's. Who likes Lay's chips, by the way? Bless you. All right? The Lord hasn't provided something like that. He provided a happy meal from McDonald's, fast food. No. He's provided a feast. A meal that we could not prepare ourselves. A meal that truly does satisfy. Because it's himself. No, he gives you a seat at his table. Oil on your head, a cup overflowing. So the sheep of the good shepherd, God does not just put up with you. He delights in you. You've been welcomed to his table. And before you serve at the table, you are a guest at the table. So let our serving and our parenting and our working and our retirement flow from being with Jesus before doing for Jesus. Are y'all with me? This is Psalm 23. To cultivate presence with Jesus, the good shepherd. To be with him before doing for him. If we get those backwards, we're in a default to religion. Legalism. Exhaustion. You know, our good shepherd invites us and to remind us of who he is and what he's provided in himself. This means we receive before we pour out, because an empty cup has very little to give. If you're on E this morning, empty on the tank, welcome. Come be filled by Jesus, our good shepherd, who emptied himself so that we could be made full. See, we receive only that which he can give so that his kindness, his grace, his generosity and hospitality overflows out of us by his Spirit. and into this world and the world in which we live. See, a welcomed person welcomes others into this overflowing goodness and mercy. Look at this last verse with me. Psalm 23, verse 6 says, surely, oh, all this is good. Be with confidence, surely goodness and mercy. Steadfast love is a word. Shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. See, David knew what it meant to be pursued. Saul pursued him. Enemies pursued him. Even his own son pursued him. Even in David's own life, there's so much family dysfunction going on. So if you're coming in with some family dysfunction, the gospel's for you. He provides a different table, church. Maybe than the a different table than the one you grew up with. That's why God is our Father. He brings us in into a new family, a new way of doing things, a new path of righteousness, still waters that he provides. A good Father that corrects and guides. But now David looks over his shoulder and realizes the deepest thing pursuing him is not these things. The deepest thing pursuing him is the goodness and steadfast love of God. Church, what is pursuing you this morning? What is haunting you? Is it uncertainty? Is it deadlines? Is it expectations? Is it bills, regret, your past? See, David says something else is coming after God's people, goodness and mercy. And is this all that there is that we see? No, we see in the text that there's pasture, there's a path, there's a valley, there's a table, and now we see that there is a house. Church, we're going somewhere. Do you see it in the text? There's a movement, there is a direction. The valley is not home. The enemy's presence is not home. This exhausting season is not home. The grief is not home. No, God is leading his people toward himself. See, the psalm doesn't ultimately end with pasture. It does not end with water. It does not end with protection. It doesn't even end with the overflowing cup. It ends with God. The greatest gift the shepherd gives his sheep is himself. That's why Jesus says in John chapter 10, I am. I am the good shepherd. And this shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Why can we trust this shepherd? Because he did not stand outside our valley shouting instructions. No, he entered into the valley. He walked through suffering, rejection, betrayal, and even death. And he laid down his life for wandering sheep on his own accord. And the shepherd became the sacrifice for his sheep. And then he rose from the grave. That's why the book of Hebrews calls him the great shepherd of the sheep. Our good shepherd lives. Therefore, we can face tomorrow and even today. He knows your name. He's gone before you. He walks beside you. His goodness follows behind you, and he is bringing his people home. Do you believe this, church? For the worn out, for the prideful in the room, for the prodigal, for the grieving heart, for the one who is carrying more than God ever asked you to carry, Psalm 23 says, you have a shepherd. Where he says, lie down, church, I encourage you to rest. Where he says, follow, take the step. Where he uses the staff, receive correction. When he leads into the valley, trust his presence. When he prepares the table, sit down and receive. You were never meant to be enough for yourself. You need a shepherd. Jesus is the good shepherd. Let him shepherd your heart. Let me pray.